You're watching Notepad, and I'm your host, Ibrahim Sani. The conversation this week are plenty when it comes to the Malaysian economy, because the government and the private sector both are alike and in tune, because they want to solve that big puzzle of economic recovery. And because of this, there's a lot of other issues surrounding it that includes financial leadership in such a tumultuous period. What better to talk about this than with the association, the unified voice of AIKPA and SEMA. Joining us is Venkat Ramanan, the Regional Vice President of Asia Pacific of the association. Venkat, thanks again for taking the time and risking your life and limb to speak with us in this COVID environment. Let's talk about some developments surrounding the country. The Finance Minister yesterday during Invest Malaysia outlined some four broad themes that will be included in the budget 2021. And all these four themes are solving that big problem of governance. And they want to address the issues of basically everything that surrounds economic recovery. What would be some of your thoughts regarding that statement that was made by the Prime Minister, by the Finance Minister yesterday?
Thanks, Ibrahim, and thank you for having me here. It may be risking life and limb, but this conversation is worth to have. critically, for any economy to grow, you have to look at the model of recovery, whether you're looking at a V-shaped recovery or a U-shaped recovery or ending up with an L-shape. So any government's position is to have a quick V-shaped recovery. It's a one-off shift and then back to its norm again. And Malaysia has been very good in terms of containing the coronavirus as well as looking after the care for the people in terms of protecting it and having the numbers very low. That also means the policies and the budget principles around the four guidance, some things like care for people, looks at education, digitization, and these are important things to look for right now. Any economy to recover faster than anything, the government can do so much, but it's how the industry picks up from there. And I think what's important here is the education principles are good, social mobilities are good, but criticality is how do we grow our GDP very quickly, get foreign direct investment into the country. And I think there is a combined role in which the private sector can do forward is to reskill its team members faster than anything else. And Ibrahim, as an example, if you ask me, 3 months ago, 4 months ago, before everything started, I'm a one-dimensional cook. I only know one thing to make. But right now, I have many repertoires from Italian to Indian, which I can now cook because I had to learn new skills myself during this time. And if the mindset is there and if the people can develop new skills, the private sector can use those new skills. We can attract foreign direct investment into the country because it's just not about the resources, but what can people bring and what innovation can we drive that makes the country more attractive for investments?
One thing about reskilling staff, I mean, we'll deep dive on that in a bit. Yesterday's conversation was plenty on corporate earnings and SME earnings as well, unlisted, of course. The worry from fund managers yesterday, at least, is that while they acknowledge that corporate earnings for the country is going to be impacted this year, they don't have that optimism about next year as well. And the thing about this is that some of them are a little bit optimistic about corporate earnings for other markets next year. So that really puts us in a very problematic shape because we don't have that kind of confidence coming in from the external investors as well as domestic investors for that matter. This pessimism and optimism, you know, I don't know whether, you know, reskilling and all that can solve this big mega problem. Do you think that they are right in having that kind of pessimistic view for the country, at least for this year and next year?
They will have every data to guide them. But the point in which this is, these extraordinary times don't relate just only to Malaysia. The extraordinary times relate to pessimism across the world, because if you ask anyone what are the greatest thing that keep them up at night, is one is the extended sense of recession, how long it's going to last, and there's something else. Fourth thing was whether there'll be another wave and other future illnesses to come. I mean, you look at the news and reports, right? They're looking at new viruses being coming out. How would that affect us, the second wave or the third wave? It is in those scope, if the companies can innovate what they do and innovate quickly, then you don't need to worry about much. Mm. It's about how do you bring that innovation to a consumer? Because the economy is driven by the fact that there are products and services, people buy those products and services and experience, and then the demand grows. But if companies are not going to innovate, stay in their bubble, and expect consumers to shift around, that's not going to work. So, for example, my wife is a firm believer, as most households, to go shop and buy groceries. Mm. They want to physically touch and see. Mm. What has forced change us is we are doing less of that and we are ordering online more. But on that, Ibrahim, if you look at the bigger retailers, it couldn't respond to the demand earlier when this situation around COVID happened. It was the smaller retailers that came out quickly, including your grocery shops, so those who are selling fruits and vegetables. What did they do? They used WhatsApp, sent in the orders, said we will deliver it by today, or you can send your Grab rider to pick it up. Within 24 hours, that was fulfilled. So the ability to innovate and ability to bring products and services to people faster means much more now. And if you look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs, what people need in a situation like this is their safety, the food, the security, the shelter. So that's where they're going to invest more. So if companies are going to innovate and produce that and fulfill those things, and then over a period of time look at other fulfillments as confidence grow, mm. then they're able to be in a good position. But every investor has that fear and has every right to have that fear if we don't innovate.
Okay, let's zoom in on some of the themes that we want to bring out from this interview. One of them is, of course, leadership and financial leadership, of course. The Association of International Certified Professional Accountants is the unified voice for AICPA and CIMA. And CIMA has, you know, it's a little bit closer to home, actually, because I've been, there are options for me to go into financial accounting. I didn't want that. I wanted management accounting because it gives me a closer pulse of how the business is run. And that was one of the bigger themes that I want to touch upon in this post-COVID-19 period, right? Businesses, I take your point that they have to be a little bit more nimble and respond to the consumer's needs faster, quicker. But at the same time, they are limited by the restrictions that they have. Cash flow is a big problem for big and small companies. We've seen today AirAsia is at risk of being listed as a PN17 company. EY raised their concerns, saying that there's some going concern issues, material issues resulting in that. And of course, AirAsia is badly affected by COVID-19. It's in the tourism business, it's in the travel business. And we expect more of these mega companies to actually go through that kind of some of that problems. How can finance leaders rise up to the challenge now more than ever and help to solve the company's problems, at least in the near term, when you know issues like cash flow is a big problem for these kind of companies?
Well, finance leaders have a very important role to play. And this is not just about balancing your books or preparing statements or meeting external stakeholders' requirements. If you look at any organization, and you just take us, for example, Ibrahim, and the story about ourselves is that when we do have a virus before COVID-19, our bodies have to be resilient enough to face it, mm. right? I mean, we don't go running to the doctors asking for antibiotics, and if you're prescribed antibiotics, that's the wrong thing. Our body should be resilient enough to face or overcome the cough, the cold, the sore throat that exists, right? That's resilience. If a company can't be resilient during trying times, then there's a fundamental problem in the way the organization has prioritized itself. Look at the amount of companies that have folded or even can't sustain 2 months' salaries because of cash flow issues. Finance leadership has to look not only short, medium, but also long term. So the first short term is these kind of things are a wake-up call for CFOs, finance directors to look at what does resilience mean, not only in an existing world, in a new world. What do we need to buffer up for? So cash is important, but also managing your credit and your payments are important. How do you prioritize investments across? How do you do what we call a great reset? Things that should have been done before, brought to the board's attention as well as senior management's attention, saying, let's innovate now, let's go into this. What would have been the conversation at that point? Would have been saying, not now, let's not change anything. Mm. But if you look at what's happening in a COVID world, that's being pressed and done faster. The question is, why wasn't it being done earlier? So finance leadership now need to bring in resilience. They need to look at the business and weather every storm possible to make sure that it is a going concern without having to face any debt issues or a business continuity issue.
Then the role of the CEO and the CFO, that role is no longer distinct, right? Finance directors really need to know the business. They can't
Absolutely.
Just look at the financial accounting aspect of things.
We always say the definition of a CFO must be a co-pilot. A CFO is just not a navigator who sits behind and says, go over there. Yeah. Remember the planes older days, they had a navigator who sat at the back
guy.
And who used to take a measurement and say, this is where we are, this is the direction and everything around that. So if the pilot can't fly the plane, the navigator says, that's not my job.
Yeah.
A CFO is a co-pilot now, in line with the CEO. They have to look at the business together. They need to be able to challenge each other and say, is this where we are heading? CEOs always plunge for opportunities. They don't look for something. They when they see an opportunity, they die for it. Is that wrong? No, because they have the insights to see it. CFOs should be able to tell them, in a world when you're going, these are the things that you're going to face, these are the risks that you're going to have, and therefore these are your recommendation. Most finance leaders, or some, I shouldn't generalize it, don't like to live in an uncertain world. They like rationality, they like certainty. That's why controls are being put in place, policies are being derived, because when they have certainty...
Mitigating risk is their motto of the day.
But what we say is the finance leaders need to be in the same environment as CEOs, that the world is going to be, as CEOs face a chaotic world. I mean, a CEO is not going to get a call at 10 o'clock in the morning about a crisis.
Mm.
CEO gets a call when the crisis actually happens. The CFO needs to be in that robust world, being able to support the CEO through that chaotic process. So if a plane is going through severe turbulence, the CFO, the co-pilot, needs to help him see it through. So challenge must be there on that reset. Organizations need to challenge. The stewardship function is important as a finance leader. But more importantly, there's no stewardship if the organization doesn't exist.
Mm.
So CFOs need to play that role.
We'll take a short break before we continue our rather invigorating conversation with Venkat of the association. Don't go anywhere. Thanks for staying on with us. We are with Venkat Ramanan of the association. Of course, this is a body that is the unified voice of AICPA and SEMA. Before we left off for the break, we were talking about the need for the organization to be nimble and address the market demands and needs and wants. At the same time, internally, a corporation needs to have that whole business idea imbued between all its chief executives as well as the C-suite members. There is this big opportunity for companies to also retrain themselves, not just in the hard skills that they have, but in terms of what they do in life. Case in point, I have never painted anything in my life. I painted my house during the MCO period. During that time, I don't have the luxuries of our cameraman here. I picked up a camera, became a cameraman myself, and taught even my daughter to figure out how to operate a camera. These are the little things that I felt that I took it for granted. Extrapolating this with the business of running things, do you think that there has to be less of a resistance between cross-functional understanding of how the business works? Because when we work in a large company, we tend to say, that's not my job, that's the other person's job, deal with the other person. That kind of mindset has to really change if we were to succeed in this very, very tough and trying environment.
Very good question, Ibrahim. And these are things that even business leaders resonate quite most with us. Here's the thing. When people say, these are not my job, the situation or the other way of putting it, what if there's no job? Right? I mean, we have to look at an organization as a collective unit to move things forward. And the more silo-centric nature is not because of the fact that they're silo protective, is because they are uncomfortable or uncertain about not knowing about what they do. Because when you don't know, it prohibits or restricts. Like you said, you have picked up new skills, but you got off something called your comfort zone to do it.
Mm.
Before this COVID situation happened, you were in that comfort zone that you did not have to have camera skills or any other skills because it was done by someone.
Mm.
the situation forced you to change. But here is where we see the difference. Everyone wants to learn skills, or everyone says once we learn the skills, we need to have tools. But the first thing, and you adequately mentioned the same thing, mindset. If the mindset doesn't change, however much skills and tools you give,
it's not going to work.
It's not going to work.
Yeah.
So the great reset that we need to have in ourselves is, we are now, one of the things according to World Economic Forum, they spoke about the future of workforce management, is to sort out the anxiety and fear in individuals, right? Whether there's going to be a job, whether they are going to be able to sustain themselves, earn a living, pay their debts, and build their future. But they need to be able to see, what change do I need to make in order to make that work? And we speak about innovation, is not the role of innovation is not left to the chief innovation officer or a strategy team to develop innovation. Innovation comes from people. So if your mindset changes and you develop new skills by your own and you see that being important, you're able to bring the innovation ideas to the organization who can benefit from that to keep that moving. So no more are you stuck in a cross-functional purposes. And in a time of crisis, Ibrahim, you have seen people coming and saying, how could we help you?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, you see frontline workers being supported by restaurants, yeah. by human beings, supplying masks,
yeah.
other things. The same kind of thinking needs to continue in a social mobility crisis manner in organizations to say, we are fighting for our future, in not only in survival, but growth, that we give you job stability for the X number of years to come. Step in. And leaders need to drive that message, and people need to empower that message and embrace it.
One conversation that I find very interesting was that yesterday I met a risk officer of a large firm in Malaysia. He was talking about the biggest risk right now is not about COVID-19 per se. It's actually complacency, because yeah. it's not easy to remain vigilant all the time, every time. And risk is, you know, everything from business risk to literally the risk of contracting the disease from one colleague to another. That kind of awareness needs to be up all the time. And when you take that as an essence and you extrapolate that to another conversation of how to grow the business, people tend to be complacent over time. What would be some of the measures you think would be important for us to actually discuss when we talk about maintaining that vigilance and trying to understand that the risk of going out of business is actually quite real and quite urgent for us to address, and also mitigating the risk of us not being able to innovate the way we did during the MCO, because people innovated then, now everything's shifting back to normal, complacency might set in. How do you solve that big problem?
It's a human problem first, right?
It is.
It is a massive human problem.
Yeah.
So here is where it is. We will, as human beings, we will always weather the storm, and the sun will always rise. That never shifts, right? The rain will have to stop one day. But this rain is going to prolong a little bit longer than the usual kind of crisis that we have had, right? We had World War I and World War II that took a longer period to overcome. We had the Spanish flu and every other occurrence and incidents that we have faced over our human mankind. We have seen that we are able to bounce back. But this is slightly different to that. This is where our awareness needs to be there. Our ability to innovate needs to be there. Our ability to rethink needs to be there. I mean, I have now, in the past 3-4 months, done more work than I've ever done before, because I need to remain connected with my teams. And every people you speak to who are in the business are saying the same thing. But then there's a general sense of awkwardness. I'm used to talking to people face-to-face like you. And now I have to move into a Zoom environment where I'm seeing a screen and half the team switching off their videos, and I feel like I'm talking to a black wall
yeah,
there.
Yeah.
I need to now know how to adapt my skills in order to be able to talk to a set of people who I'm not going to meet as I used to meet, and communicate them with conviction, courage, and create a collaboration environment. Now, that also needs to translate in a way, how would I embrace the future or the new norm that we're going to have? Offices are going to open, but offices are not going to open in the same way that we have. It's going to be a very hybrid structure. When we return back, we are going to have a general sense of awkwardness initially, because our colleagues, we have not met and interacted in the way we have. We are heightened sense of alertness should not be only in the short term, but continuously focused upon. So there are a lot of human changes that we need to have as behavioral changes. But then look at it, Brahim. Younger generation is telling the older generation on things not to do. The older generation told us not to go out. Now the younger generation is telling older generation not to go out and expose yourselves. older generation are more adaptable to digital skills, being forced to learn those digital skills, than what they were before. Mm-hmm. So you look at the five generation that exist and work under the same roof, we always felt the generations were different and therefore our ability to work with them would be different. But COVID has brought a balance to that because they have all adapted to work at home, stay at home, learn new digital skills and embrace that. So to your specific question, innovation and the new way we think, I think our mindset needs to be that things will get worse before they get better, and we need to weather that storm and have that resilience to meet that so that when things get better, we can adapt and change.
All right, let's talk. We'll go for one more break, but when we come back, we'll talk specifically about some of the tools that we can actually equip ourselves to weather that particular storm. Don't go anywhere. Thanks for staying on with us. I'm with Venkat of the association. We were talking about needing to be resilient in weathering that very bad storm. Let's talk about specific tools that we can help ourselves with. AIKPA and SEMA are very renowned in terms of the accounting world. Non-accounting folks are now looking into these organizations to actually equipping themselves and making themselves a little bit more familiar and close to the world of accounting, the world of business, and the world of finance. Being the regional head of the Asia Pacific region, you're looking at a lot of markets, a lot of cultures, and a lot of attitudes towards how they approach accounting and finance and business and more. Do you think that this is the time for us to actually talk a little bit more about getting ourselves certified, getting ourselves there in terms of familiar with the world of finance, and at the same time getting a uniformed standardization certification so that our qualifications are able to be recognized anywhere we go?
Absolutely, Brahim. And you speak to finance leaders, they'll tell you what they need first. Mm. Technology will be able to sort out a few things. And technology is not the solution, by the way. A lot of people think you put technology first, things will sort itself out. It's people first and technology will support that, right? So in terms of the skill sets that are required, what people or finance leaders want is speed and agility, new skills to be able to learn, the speed at which you learn it. Because when organizations are going, they want their finance team members to move up the value chain. They don't want you to keep entering data, extracting data, analyzing data, because that can be done by technology. It's already there. It has been there for
a while. Robots are doing it now.
Exactly. And automation and RPA and artificial intelligence will be able to do that further. What they need is the critical thinking skills. When analysis is provided, what do you do about that? But you can't have critical thinking skills if you are just confined to the finance space. You need to know what's happening to the external environment. You need to know what geopolitical changes are taking place. You need to know what business you are and what business will you model into. You need to know how to talk to people. You need to collaborate with people. So essentially, leadership skills, business skills, and people skills become important with the digital skills, and technical skills are given.
Yeah, the challenge for you guys then is to craft continuously a syllabus that is in tandem or in step with the requirements of the market. How is that coming along for you?
That's why we call it evergreen now. We used to have a syllabus development process that was every 4 to 5 years as standard. And when I did my qualification, I did my CMA as well, Ibrahim. We always encourage people to do your exams before a syllabus change takes place because you don't want to do the exam just before that.
Yeah.
But here is what it is. If you need to be employed, your employer need to be able to say, you got the right skills, come on board. That means it has to be relevant now. Syllabus development now is evergreen. That means when we see a change needs to be done, we bring that in. Now we have embedded something called digital skills to supplement the technical people, leadership, and business skills. Because digital skills is not about understanding or coding blockchain, but understanding what blockchain can do for you.
Yeah.
It's about knowing about cybersecurity.
Yeah.
Not that you need to understand what cybersecurity tools exist, but why is cybersecurity and protecting data important for you and your risk measurement? How does that come as importance? So where we are coming is We will continuously keep speaking to finance leaders, business leaders. We are looking at changes that are taking place in the industry. And we are evergreen equipping and changing our syllabus constantly so that when you come in, you have what is relevant now and relevant for the future till updates take place.
My personal curiosity is this. What would be some of the learnings from COVID-19 that you think should be included in the training of individual getting certification from ICPAS IMA, the association?
I believe it's a lot to do with more mindset than having the agility and the
technical
speed.
Stuff.
Yeah, because we can bring in many components in. And as we do, if you look at our syllabus, we have case studies, right? Yeah. We have case studies at three levels.
Yeah.
That means operational case study, management case study, strategic case study. Why do we bring that? Because a lot of, there is a inherent fear in accountants. They're very technical and they know what they know, but can they apply? Can they apply it in a business context?
Yeah.
So agility and speed is when we test them and when we put the simulations across that these are happening. And our exams, Ibrahim, for example, the case study at the highest level will be an email you get from your CEO says, we got an offer for merger. What is your recommendation?
So you're that's not the scariest thing.
That's the scariest thing. But they're real world. So where we want accountants and management accountants and finance leaders to be in the world is to be comfortable with being uncomfortable. Then when you get these kind of things that you're able to face them with what you have been equipped and then translate them to a different level.
Yeah. With data, with tangible evidence to support
absolutely.
That opinion.
Absolutely.
Because to answer that question that the CEO asks, he's thinking about branding, he's thinking about strategy, he's thinking about market capture. And the accountant might think differently, you know, whether it's valued accurately and stuff like that. And that is where, I guess, the marriage of strategic and finance is actually quite good.
Spot on, because no CEO is going to give you the data, write a long email and say, what do you think?
Yeah.
CEOs are in that chaotic world, as spoken earlier. They are being faced with crises, opportunities, issues that they have to negate and to drive the organization for the next 2 to 3 years. No more 5 to 10 as COVID changes things. Yeah. They need a team who can support them by being able to be agile and nimble and to understand the changes and provide options for those decisions to be made. The role of any finance person is to provide insights to impact, not just providing insights. If you provide insights that don't make an impact, don't provide them in any way. They're irrelevant. So impact is what CEOs want to make because they face stakeholders, shareholders, regulators. They need to have the correct information at the right time delivered to them so they can confidently articulate and implement and drive confidence in the market at a larger pace. The finance people are the right people geared to do it.
I think that's a good place to end, actually. That was Venkat Ramanan, the regional VP of Asia Pacific, of the association. If you've missed any part of this interview, just head on to Astro. I only look for Notepad over there. You can watch these kind of interviews on your mobile devices. Download the Astro only app on your mobile devices. You can get it from the Google Play or the Apple App Store. Until next time, thanks very much for watching and goodbye.